This is Kids These Days.
Today, it's a conversation about living life without kids in it. We explore being child-free today on the show. Sometimes people remain child-free by chance, and sometimes it happens by choice. In conversations with two different women, we talk about both experiences today. Also, we learn about a Pew Research study that looked at the reasons behind the rise in childlessness. That and much more on today's Kids These Days. Hi, I'm Shanna Sheehy. We're taking today's topic in parts. The show may be called Kids These Days, but we recognize not everyone has children or wants to have children. So we're exploring being child-free on today's program. First up, we're looking at being child-free by chance. Lisa Manterfield is an author, blogger, speaker, and coach. As the founder of LifeWithoutBaby.com, she's built an international online community to help women come to terms with being childless, not by choice. She's the author of the recently released memoir, I'm Taking My Eggs and Going Home, How One Woman Dared to Say No to Motherhood, the story of her struggle with infertility and her ultimate decision to create a fulfilling life without children. Lisa writes the Plan B Life blog on psychologytoday.com and has spoken on the topic of life after infertility on stage, television, radio, online, and in print. Lisa lives in California but is originally from Sheffield, England. That's where she joins us from now. Lisa, welcome to Kids These Days.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on the show.
Well, it's great to have you. And as I mentioned in your introduction, you wrote a memoir, and it was of your journey of trying very hard and ultimately not being successful in trying to have your own child. And I hope that you might be able to tell our listeners a little bit about that story, it was about a five-year journey that you were on where you were trying very hard to get pregnant. Could you fill us in on some of those details that you think are most relevant?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It was about a five-year journey, and my husband and I had decided that we, at first we start from the very beginning. We had no evidence that we were going to have any problems in conceiving. So we kind of went on that journey, and, you know, things didn't go as planned, and we started, you know, going to doctor's appointments and trying to figure out why this wasn't working and couldn't really get an answer. And so we decided to try some more kind of natural, traditional Chinese medicine, and we wanted to try and take a more natural approach before we ventured into some of the more invasive fertility treatments, and at that time, that wasn't something that we thought we needed, and so we just kind of went on with this journey and trying to find an answer as to why I was not able to conceive, and we never really got a firm answer, and so we kind of ran in circles for a long, long time, and you know, not really knowing who to ask or what questions to ask. And finally, we did get a diagnosis, and we did, in fact, venture into, Western medicine and IVF and those kinds of treatments. But we decided actually not to go down that route. And as it turned out, once we did finally get our ultimate diagnosis, we found out that those treatments would not have worked for us anyway. And so, through all that, this desire to have a child for me just got more and more kind of crazy until it was the only thing that I could think about. And it kind of took control of our entire lives. And ultimately, we got to the point where we just said, you know what? Let's take a step back. Let's remember why we got together in the first place. Had I not found this incredible person who I wanted to have children with, I wouldn't have been on this journey in the first place. So let's take a big deep breath and take a step back. And we decided that what we needed to do for ourselves was kind of step off this crazy train and figure out how to just build a life for ourselves as a family of two, which is something that I had never considered, until I was faced with that as an option kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the condensed version of our story.
And In your memoir, as you tell that story in greater detail, you also are very honest and revealing about the emotions that you're feeling along the way. And you use the term crazy train just now and also in your book. And you give us some insight into some, you know, ideas that, you know, were pretty crazy, like imagining waiting for your husband to die so that you could adopt a child. And, you know, thinking about taking babies from the hospital and so forth. And of course, these were just fantasies, and you admit that they were fantasies, but you're very honest about where your mind was going during this period of time. And how was it being so emotionally open on those pages as you wrote about the feelings that you had coming to terms with infertility?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting because firstly, I will say that I'm a pretty normal person. I'm not the kind of person that has a, you know, psychotic ideas about killing off my husband or stealing other people's babies. I mean, I'm just, it's not something that I normally do. I'm actually quite a private person, believe it or not. And so part of my journey actually was, you know, being very uncomfortable, even with people that I cared about very deeply and I knew I could trust, but about talking about what we were going through at the time, it was very hard to do. And so my kind of personal therapy, if you like, was writing about this. And I wrote about it in journals, and I wrote for basically through the whole journey, apart from a period of about a year where I just didn't want to write about it anymore. I kept, a journal, kept writing down the stories, and that for me was very helpful to kind of put that down on paper. But I also found that I was always trying to find the humor in the situation, and, you know, sometimes that humor was just not there. And I realized, I'd written these journals, and then I went back and actually wrote the book. And at that point, I'd already created the website that you mentioned, Life Without Baby. And I realized that, you know, I wasn't the only person out there that this had ever happened to. And I realized that by being honest on the blog that I had on the website, that I'd really connected with people, and people had said, wow, you know, this is exactly how I felt. And so I knew that when I was going to put my story down on paper to share with other people, that if I really wanted to make a difference and touch those people, I knew that I had to be really honest about how I felt. And it wasn't always comfortable because, as you mentioned, some of those, albeit fleeting, thoughts that I had were not really things that a person wants to admit to. You know, some of those thoughts were pretty out there and pretty crazy, but I think I'm glad that I did it, and it was difficult, and it was difficult for people that I know well to read about, you know, some of those things that I'd been through. But I think overall, being honest about that and how, you know, somebody who's perfectly logical and kind of a straightforward thinker can start having these ideas and these fantasies and just become completely obsessed with this idea of having a baby.
Mm-hmm. And in your book, you also, you know, you spend a little bit of time examining what you call a mom-centric culture. And you mentioned that, you know, a movie star from decades ago, you know, disappeared off set and then magically had this family. And there was no evidence of that woman being pregnant and having children and having small children and so forth. But that has evolved into, you know, millions of dollars being paid for the children of movie stars to appear on magazine covers and so forth. Can you explain a little bit more about how you see this mom-centric society and then what kind of pressure you feel like that put on you and other women?
Yeah, and I, you know, as somebody who was unable to have children, to walk into a grocery store and see a rack of, you know, magazines filled with celebrity baby bumps is particularly when you're going through, you know, some of the more painful emotional parts of infertility, to see that and kind of have that in your face all the time is really hard. But there's still this notion that all women will marry and have children or, you know, find a partner and have children, but the have children is always kind of have expected. And so you still kind of get those strange looks from people, not everybody, but certainly from the majority of people when you say you don't have children. There's always that moment of you see the thought go across their eyes of, oh, I wonder why not. Does she not like children? She must not like children. Or, oh, maybe she can't have children. But you see that brief moment of, well, everybody's going to have children, aren't they? So that even though so much has changed over the decades and there is, I think, less stigma now, somewhat less stigma for people who choose to not have children, it still exists. And so it is still assumed that a woman will at some point have children.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a great time to play this. While the choice to not have children is a personal one, there can be a negative social stigma attached to those who are child-free, even especially for women who choose not to become mothers. That said, the Pew Research Foundation found that the childlessness rate has doubled since the 1970s. So are things changing? Producer Sarah Gonzalez spoke with Dr. Gretchen Livingston at the Pew Research Foundation in Washington, D.C. to ask about her recent findings on the link between increasing rates of childlessness and more relaxed social attitudes.
Dr. Gretchen Livingston, thank you for joining us on Kids These Days.
Well, thank you for having me.
You published a report in the last year that showed childlessness rates are up among all women and they're down among women with advanced degrees. Can you explain a little more? What does that mean?
Well, we had data from the U.S. Census Bureau that looks in particular at women ages 40 to 44, and we consider those women to be at or nearing the end of their childbearing years. And we found that about 18% of women, or almost 20% of these women, were childless in the late 2000s. And in comparison, that number was 10% in 1976. So that reflects quite a big increase during that time period.
So, Gretchen, for comparison, in your report, you say that 1 in 10 women in the 70s has never had a child. Well, today it's closer to 1 in almost 5 women who've never had a child. What are some of the speculations surrounding that rise in numbers of women who have never had a child?
Yeah, it's really interesting that the rates have almost doubled in that time period. And we've got several different theories. First of all, there's a lot of demographic factors. First of all, women are, and everyone is just less likely to get married these days than they were back then. And typically, childbearing occurs in marriage more than outside marriage. So that's a factor. Also, women are going to school longer, which is delaying their childbearing. And, of course, delaying childbearing too long can lead to problems with infertility and things like that. And at the same time, we've also seen some changes in attitudes. There seems to be some more tolerance of women not having children. For instance, whereas in 1990, about 65% of people said kids are very important for a successful marriage, in 2007, which is not that much later than 1990, really, that number had dropped to 41%.
Big change.
Exactly. People are more accepting of the idea that a marriage doesn't have to have children in it to be a successful marriage.
Okay. Gretchen, can you comment at all on why the social attitudes of people who make statements like marriage is being incomplete or unhappy without children, why those might be changing?
That is a great question, and I can't be sure of what's going on. You know, it could be a fact that attitudes are changing and then behaviors are changing, but it could also be a little bit of the reverse as people come to see and know childless women in their own lives. Perhaps that's also contributing to their change in attitudes. Mm-hmm. I should say that there are still, even though overall attitudes do seem to be changing a little bit as far as acceptance of childlessness, there is still a sizable minority of people, almost 30%, who still say that women who never have kids is a bad thing for society. So while the majority of people think women not having children is makes no difference to society one way or the other. You know, it's important to remember that there are still folks who are not comfortable with that. And that's particularly common among blacks and Hispanics to have that attitude. We also found that younger folks were more likely to say that childlessness is bad for society than older folks, which seems kind of surprising to me. You know, we typically think of younger people as being more accepting of a variety of family forms and that type of thing. So just, you know, to put things in perspective, I think tolerance has come a long way as far as childlessness, but at the same time, it's not 100% yet.
Okay. Well, Gretchen, thank you so much for joining us today to talk about this. I appreciate your time.
Well, thank you so much.
That was our producer, Sarah Gonzalez. You can find the full report that was referenced here from the Pew Research Foundation by going to our website. That's kidsthesedays.org. I'm Shanna Sheehy, and I'm talking today with Lisa Manterfield. She is the author of the memoir, I'm Taking My Eggs and Going Home, How One Woman Dared to Say No to Motherhood. Lisa, you know, in that piece we just heard from our producer, Sarah Gonzalez, you know, there's some interesting information that's a little conflicting to me, where there's evidence that social attitudes toward childlessness are changing, but then there's also some pretty strong opinions that some people, the minority of people, have about women who don't have children. Do you have any comments on those ideas?
Yeah, the interview was really fascinating, actually. I'm familiar with that study, but it was really interesting to hear the background on that. And I think it's I think that attitude really varies by region. I mean, I am, you know, my home is in Los Angeles, and you know, I have I would actually say the majority of my friends don't have children, and I think that's just the kind of the way I probably gravitated towards those people, because I don't have children myself. But certainly attitudes in a big metropolis like that are definitely different to, you know, there's a couple of people I've spoken to through my website who live in small communities, and they go to their church on Sunday, and they, you know, their family is the only family in the whole community that doesn't have children who are of childbearing age. And so they are faced with some very different attitudes and some very different prejudices and issues that go along with that. So I think it also depends on, you know, what part of the country, what part of the world you're in, too. I was really interested that she said that they found that that younger people are more likely to say that women not having children is bad for society than older people. And I've actually found that to be the case also. When I fly quite a bit, I travel quite a bit, and if I get into a conversation with an older person on a plane and the subject of children comes up, and they say, do you have children? And, you know, discussion ensues. And I find that older people are generally much more tolerant and much more understanding of that idea that, you know, it's having children isn't for everybody, or some people can't have children, and that's okay. That doesn't make them a lesser person in society. So I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. Do you think, Lisa Manterfield, that you know, being a childless woman is not a new phenomenon? Throughout the ages, there have been women who have been unable to have children. So do you believe, we were just talking about different places in the world and attitudes toward that. So do you think that there is a special place in our societies for women who don't have children?
Absolutely. And of course, I'm biased in my opinion of that, being one of those women. But yet, I've been, you mentioned earlier a new book that I've been working on, so I've been doing quite a bit of research about different women through history who didn't have children. And I was just writing recently, for example, about Anne Sullivan and Helen Keller, who neither, of course, had children. So, I mean, Anne Sullivan really devoted her life to the care and the teaching and the guidance of Helen Keller. And so without her place in society, you know, without her dedication, the world would not have known Helen Keller and the work that she did. And, you know, would that have been different if Anne Sullivan had chosen to have children or had been able to have children? Who's to say? I don't know. But there's certainly, without children, she certainly had the freedom to be able to devote her life to her work. And you certainly see that with a lot of other women throughout history, people like Amelia Earhart, Diane Fossey, Rosa Parks even did not have children of her own. So there's certainly been a lot of women throughout history who have either, you know, obviously in more recent history, chosen not to have children or been unable to have children and found a place for themselves in society. So I think the answer to your question from my point of view is yes.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to ask you, this is kind of going back a little bit in our conversation, but do you believe that there's an identity that very closely links womanhood to motherhood, and that might be where some of the anguish comes from in a case like yours where you wanted motherhood and it wasn't possible for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think at some level that's a really kind of basic human instinct to reproduce. And that's not something that, even though we now have the ability to make a choice about whether that's something that we want to do, I think at a very deep level it is a basic kind of primal urge to want to reproduce. And so I think some of the drive for motherhood comes from that. Some of it is certainly pressure from family, parents who want to see grandchildren in their lives, from friends who, you know, if you're in a circle of friends who are all having children, it's very hard to not be involved in that circle. So some of it is definitely societal as well. And I know for me, from my own journey, you know, one of the things that drove me had actually nothing to do with having children or motherhood at all, but it was about not being able to accept that my body couldn't do this thing that it was, you know, basically programmed and designed to do. And so that kind of drive for motherhood, I think, comes from all different places, you know, partly from a basic human instinct, partly from society, and just that desire. You know, I think there's a place. I know I have a small hole that would have been filled by children that is not going to be filled, and I don't think there's anything for me, from my own point of view, there's not anything else that is going to ever fill that hole. But it's a small hole, and I have other things. You know, I have other things in my life that I am other ways that I'm fulfilled. But I think there's always going to be that small hole there that motherhood would have filled. Mm-hmm. I think the trick is to learn to live with that. And I think everybody. So somebody on my website said once that everybody has holes in their lives. It's just that not everybody's a child-shaped. And I think that's really true. We all have something that's not as perfect as we'd like in our lives. But, you know, for those of us who wanted children and couldn't, then that thing is a child.
Well, I'd like to quote you, Lisa Manterfield, from your book, I'm Taking My Eggs and Going Home. You write there, "There had been no ceremony to mark the passing of my motherhood, no announcement in the local newspaper, and no cards of sympathy from well-wishers. Concerned friends and neighbors hadn't rallied around, bringing casseroles and offering assistance, because my loss was not visible. There were no framed photos on the mantelpiece to show what had been taken away from me, and no ritual outlet for my grief. Infertility was a silent, unspoken loss, and I had not been given the chance to mourn." That struck me, and it was so beautifully put, and it so, to me, described how your grief felt. I wanted to ask you about grieving the loss of something like the possibility of having your own child, and I'm hoping that you might be able to share some of your experience or some advice or whatever you might be able to say to help other women who are listening to this, who are in that same boat and trying to reconcile what's happening with them.
Yeah, and I think the first step there is to actually acknowledge that loss and I didn't at first. I didn't understand it as a loss because, as I said in that little passage that you read there, it's not tangible. There was nothing, you know, that child never physically existed. But those children existed in my imagination and in my heart. I'd created a life around this plan for having children. So for me, they existed. And I didn't at first understand that. I didn't understand and acknowledge that I had lost something that had been real, although not physically real. So I think that first step is to acknowledge that if you are somebody who wanted children and whether and were unable to, or whether because of infertility or loss, or if you just ran out of time or never met the right person and that window of opportunity has closed, then I think the first step is to acknowledge that loss. And then you need to grieve that loss in whatever way is right for you. Mm-hmm. And I found a way to kind of mark that passing, if you like. And I think that was really important for me to find, whether it's be a ritual or a place to go, or I've known people who've planted gardens or planted trees or kind of designated a place that is their place to go, just as if you'd lost, you know, somebody who had existed physically, you would have, you know, a memorial, a place, some kind of tradition or ceremony or whatever it is in your particular culture to mark that passing, and a place to go that says, okay, this is where I come to think about this person. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's really important to figure out what your own personal ritual or memorial is, and allow yourself to go through that process, to grieve that loss, because it is a loss. And you know, the mind doesn't differentiate one kind of loss from another. It just feels that loss, and it's important to acknowledge that and grieve it.
You mentioned in your book that you're not prone to the everything happens for a reason way of thinking. But here I am speaking with you about this wonderful memoir that you've written, and you have an active online community on lifewithoutbaby.com, and you have a blog that's on Psychology Today. Is there a little bit of a none of this would have happened without having had the experience that you've had? Is there a little bit of a connection there that you might be able to draw?
Yeah, because if I hadn't had this experience, I certainly wouldn't have had the blog or written the book or any of it. You know, much of what I'm doing and enjoying doing, frankly, with my work, I would not have had the opportunity to do. But I'm not of the mindset that the universe or a higher power or whatever you like to think of had this plan for me. But this thing happened to me, and so I wanted to make the most of, not take advantage of the opportunity, but I had an experience and a way to share it through what I do for a living, which is write and tell stories. And so I had this outlet for my own story and a way to maybe share that and hopefully help other people who've been through something similar and know that they're not alone. And so, yeah, I mean, definitely, I certainly wouldn't be sitting here talking to you right now if this hadn't happened, but would I? Am I glad that it worked out this way? Not really. Not really, but it did, and so I'm going to make the most of it.
Well, Lisa Manderfield, it's truly been a pleasure to talk with you today on Kids These Days. Thanks so much for joining us and for sharing your story.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Lisa Manderfield is the author of I'm Taking My Eggs and Going Home, How One Woman Dared to Say No to Motherhood, and she's the founder of LifeWithoutBaby.com. She's currently working on a new book, Women Who Rock the World Instead of the Cradle. We'll link to Lisa's blog as well as ways to find her book from our website at kidsthesedays.org. Coming up after a short break, Kids These Days producer Sarah Gonzalez talks with Dr. Ellen Walker about being child-free by choice. Dr. Walker has written a guidebook that can help people choosing to opt out of parenthood navigate a family-centric world. Stay with us for that and more coming right up.
I walked across an empty land. I knew the pathway like the back of my hand. I felt the earth beneath my feet. Sat by the river and it made me complete. Oh, simple thing, where have you gone? I'm getting old and I need something to rely on. So tell me when you're gonna let me in. I'm getting tired and I need somewhere to begin.
Next time on the program, Kids These Days is turning the spotlight on adolescent boys. We'll look at normal young male brain development and explore emotional maturity. And we'll learn about rites of passage, old and traditional, as well as some that are new. Plus, what books will get your adolescent boy fired up about reading? Join us for that and more next time on Kids These Days. We're back. This is Kids These Days, and I'm Shanna Sheehy. The first half of this hour, we talked about being child-free when it happens by chance. Now it's time to take a look at being child-free when one is so by choice. Kids These Days producer Sarah Gonzalez spoke to author and psychologist Dr. Ellen Walker. Walker wrote Complete Without Kids, an insider's guide to child-free living by choice or by chance. She herself is child-free and knows firsthand about life in what she calls a family-focused society. Dr. Ellen Walker is speaking with Kids These Days from her home in Bellingham, Washington.
Dr. Ellen Walker, thank you so much for joining us on Kids These Days.
Thank you.
So earlier this hour, we spoke with Lisa Manterfield, who shared her story about being child-free by chance and her very personal struggles with infertility. Your story is very different from hers, but it's also a story that many individuals who decide that having children isn't going to be a part of their life that they pursue have to tell. Would you tell us about how you came to the decision to be child-free?
I'd love to talk about that. And I do have to say that I didn't make a real conscious decision to not have kids, but I was like so many other people who didn't meet the right guy who wanted to have children. And I was very busy with my career. I went back to grad school and got my PhD when I was in my mid-30s. And so by the time I finally woke up and thought, hey, I wonder if I want to have kids, I was in my 40s. And I realized that it probably just wasn't something that was top on my priority list, as everything else had been. And so I finalized the decision at that time by trying to put some peace with it. But I do have to say that when I came to that point, the thing that really brought it forward for me was getting involved with my current husband, who is a father, and for the first time in my life, being around a man who had these adult children and hearing him interact with them very lovingly and starting to wonder if I had missed out and made a big mistake. So I went through a lot of grieving about that for a pretty short period of time, pretty much a summer. And I started to wonder if I had so much anxiety about it and doubts about it that I wondered if other women also felt that And sure enough, when I started doing my interviews, that people were so eager to talk about their experiences.
So in your book, Complete Without Kids, you interviewed a wide variety of people who were either considering the choice of not having children or who had already made the decision to be child-free. And it's really, the subtitle is An Insider's Guide to Child-Free Living by Choice or by Chance. So it's really a guidebook, in a way, for those who are considering not having children or who are already child-free. Why did you feel that there was a need for this kind of book?
There's nothing written about this. Very, very little written. If you go online and Google books about not having kids, you will come up with about 10 titles, most of which are very old, and a lot of which have a pretty strong stance one way or the other. And I just wanted to write a book that was very neutral. I wanted to help people who might have been a mom but just didn't have the right circumstance and were still feeling some emptiness about that. I wanted those people to be able to close that chapter and embrace their life without kids. And I wanted people who didn't have kids to think about some of the factors that are unique in our lives, such as what do you do with your estate when you die? You know, mm-hmm. It's important to think about that if you don't have children, so that they would be ready for dealing with life, as they proceeded. And most importantly, I wanted young people who are just going into that time in their life where they're facing what I consider to be the most important life decision of all. Do I want to be a mom? Do I want to be a dad? To have some real life examples of people who are not parents, and so they can see that you can have a wonderful life even if you don't have children.
So we're using these terms, choice, child-free by choice, child-free by chance, and I just want to define those with you and talk about what the difference might be, and also mention that in your book you further break down chance into happenstance and circumstance. Can you explain for our listeners what those distinctions are?
Right. Well, child-free by choice, there are some people who say they have always known they didn't want to have kids. Mm. You know, since they were 12 years old, they never wanted to be parents. And that's a rare group in my generation. Now, maybe growing. So those are child-free by choice. Then a child-free by happenstance are people more like myself that, you know, never had that strong maternal urge, just were busy with life and then realized, hey, all my friends are now becoming grandmothers. I guess I waited too late, and I guess I'm not going to be a mom. And then child-free by circumstance are people who wanted to be parents but either were not able to get pregnant or they didn't want to be a single parent and they never met a person to partner with.
Mm,
or maybe they got pregnant and had miscarriages. For whatever reason, they were not able to make that parenting role happen
okay.
in their life.
And you address all three types in your
uh-huh.
book.
Yes.
So in your book, I found this interesting. You say that if you had married a man who wanted to be a father when you were younger and you'd had children with him, you suspect that you would be a terrific mom now. So I think that this is really important to point out, that even though you and other people who've also made the decision to not have children for reasons that are unrelated to biology or infertility, say, it's not as though you don't want kids or are anti-kids. Is that right?
Right. I'm a very nurturing person. I'm a psychologist. So, you know, I mother my patients, of course, and I have three dogs. In fact, my husband and I have two dogs that we have raised together. One is only 12 weeks old now, but that's been really bonding for us to mm-hmm. be able to raise our puppies together. And it's met a lot of my needs to nurture and to help something grow to a mature adult. And another interesting thing is I write a blog for psychologytoday.com mm-hmm. called Complete Without Kids. And I wrote an article on ways for women to meet their natural need to nurture if they don't have children.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to tell you, I got slammed by a number of women who said they have never had the need to nurture.
Really? So you were assuming that every woman had that need, and you were going to offer ways that they could fill it, and then women responded by saying, no, I've never actually felt that.
A lot of women say that.
Huh.
It really blew me away. So.
Wow. So that's surprising. So for the women who do have that need, and I'm assuming that you see some of these clients in your private practice as a psychologist, what are some ways that you offer for them to fill that need to nurture?
Well, I think they have to look at what is their passion. If they want to be around kids, then they can go into professions like teaching or being a pediatric nurse or, you know, all kinds of jobs that are going to put them around children every day. And if they love animals, they might have a pet of their own or volunteer at the Humane Society so that they can be a dog walker or a dog foster home. They can get involved with friends' lives who have children if you know, that would be another way other than working. Or maybe they want to do something like get into horticulture, you know, nurture mm-hmm. plants.
Mm-hmm.
Or do something, do a lot of, be the person that invites friends for dinner or mm-hmm. makes cookies and takes them into the office every day.
Mm. I'd like to remind listeners that this is Kids These Days. I'm Sarah Gonzalez, and I'm talking with Dr. Ellen Walker. She's the author of Complete Without Kids, An Insider's Guide to Child-Free Living by Choice or by Chance. Dr. Walker, you point out in your book that people who choose not to have children, they'll enjoy very different kinds of evenings and weekends, leisure time, and then also different kinds of holidays. And I want to talk a little bit more about the holidays, especially ones like Mother's Day and Father's Day. How do you recommend to your patients that they deal with this?
Oh my, it's a very, very painful holiday for a lot of child-free adults, even some of us who aren't really having pain about not having children. Because it's one of those days where mothers are put up on a pedestal, and not just good mothers. It's not a good mother's day. It's anybody who got pregnant and bore a child is a queen day.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that really frustrating because mm-hmm. I don't get recognized for the nurturing things that I do. But for people who... like you mentioned, Lisa Manterfield, who wrote the book about infertility, people who have struggled with infertility, Mother's Day is just nothing but pain.
Mm-hmm.
And I suggest that they stay home, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
Stay home. Don't go to church where they're giving out the flowers to all the mothers. Turn off the radio. Just stay busy and do something else because it's going to be gone by the end of the day, and then you're safe for another whole year.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned you know, a lot of awkward social situations that can come up, and I don't think they're always, they're probably well-meaning interactions with others who say, oh, do you have kids, or how old are your kids? And if you don't have children, that can be a tricky conversation to have. So who do you think the onus is on in that situation? Should people not even be asking this question, or is it the person who's chosen child-free and, you know, they need to come up with a good way to answer that question?
Well, I think it's our job, because it's not a bad question. It's I don't think it's an unfair question to ask. And my hope is that over the next few years, as more people are talking about the choice to not have kids and it becomes more of a mainstream option, when people ask that and the answer is, no, I don't have kids, that they won't be like, oh, well, what do I talk about now?
Mm-hmm.
It's really an uncomfortable silence a lot of times. But, you know, what I try to do is explain it a little bit. You know, I'll say, no, I don't have kids, but I've got my three dogs that I raised, or, oh, my psychology practice is my child, or, you know, I try to bridge that silence, because otherwise people are jumping. They think, oh, well, Ellen must have not been able to get pregnant, or, you know, people jump to conclusions.
And in your book, you actually list, and also on your blog, CompleteWithoutKids.com, you list some questions that younger people can actually consider before they make a decision. What are some of those questions?
Well, certainly the question about what do I want my life to represent, because I feel like women especially have been pressured to do everything and then felt a huge disappointment. So realizing that if you want to have a full career that maybe is not just like an 8-to-5 job, but a career that you may spend 50 or 60 hours on a week, that being a mom is probably not going to fit in very well with that.
Mm-hmm.
That raising kids takes about 8 hours a day, and if you like to have a lot of your own leisure time and you like to get a full night's sleep, well, raising kids might not be for you. It's also very, very expensive, over $200,000, not even including college.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't have adequate financial resources, you might want to really consider whether or not being a parent is something that you can take on.
Mm. And let's talk about the biological clock. That's something that you write about, and you say that a lot of women who've already made the decision maybe to not have children, that biological clock will start ticking. You wrote about a woman who said that her womb actually ached. How do people who've already made this decision cope with what seems like a biological imperative?
Well, a lot of women really say they don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have it. One of the things that I think is critical if you have decided that you don't want to have children is to make sure that you have some friends in your life that do not have kids and are also not going to have kids, because it's so difficult if you're the only one in your peer group.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of social pressure and just reality-based as well, that Saturday night they're all going to get together for the barbecue and all their kids, the family barbecue, and there you are with your husband without children. You're going to feel like a misfit and probably not have that much fun.
Did you hear that a lot from the people that you spoke with, that they felt like misfits in their social circles?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And people, a lot of times, if you don't have children, parents suspect you. Like, you must be, maybe my kids aren't safe to be around you, or you must be a child hater. Or, you know, there's just some kind of suspicion there a lot of times, which is weird.
You know, I feel like we're talking a lot about women who've made this choice. What have been some of the stories you've heard from men who have made this choice, and are they making it as often as women, or is it more a woman-led decision?
I think it is a woman-led decision, because there are a lot more guys, if they are with someone who says, I don't really want to have kids, are fine with it.
Mm-hmm.
And men don't get the pressure. They just don't. From society, a man who doesn't have children, I don't think men are very often told, you are going to regret this, because being a father is the most fulfilling role that you will ever play in your life.
Yeah.
That's what women are told.
Hmm.
But I don't think men are told that.
That's interesting. So, you talk to a variety of people in your book, couples, singles, older people, younger people, gay, straight individuals. And I'm wondering if in some way that the gay and lesbian couples that you spoke with, that if, were they kind of early leaders within the child-free circles that you encountered?
I think so, yeah, because it seems like it's that's another group of people where it's a little bit easier to get away, to especially as a woman, get away with not having children. It's not socially expected.
Mm.
And it may even make their relationship easier because, you know, a lot of people in our country are against gay couples raising children.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're a gay couple and you just as soon not have kids, it's probably going to be better for you to not go down that path, because then you don't have to deal with negativity.
Hmm. So it almost seems like the expectation is in the reverse for straight couples who are married. Is there a stigma that goes along with against straight couples who are married and choose not to have kids? Like, you know, how you must not really love each other, or there must be something wrong with your sex life. Does that kind of stigma exist?
Those would be things that would be said, and they would also be accused of being selfish. Like they just want to have their vacations to the Caribbean,
mm-hmm.
and they're too selfish to be able to be parents.
Dr. Walker, one of the things we wanted to talk about is what happens as people who have chosen not to have children age, and they begin to not be able to take care of themselves. For a lot of people, their kids step in to help with some tasks and to help make the decisions about their care as they get older. We spoke with UAA Professor Ann Jackie. She's a sociologist who specializes in aging, and she says that about 20% of seniors over age 85 don't have kids. Seniors without children are more likely to end up paying for services, and they're more likely to live in residential, institutionalized care like a nursing home. And we have this clip from her.
One of the things that adult children do is provide a confidant source for their parents, so that their parents have somebody to talk to about problems that are coming up and locate, try to understand what's happening in the world. I mean, that is one of the things. It's a younger generation that can help you understand things that are going on. Peers can do that too. And so people who don't have children often talk to neighbors and friends, you know, in a similar way than they would to children. Another thing that children do is almost a safety net. People who have children are more likely, people who don't have children, I should say, are more likely to live alone or live in institutions compared to people who have children, who have the possibility of living with their children or having the children support them in their own homes. I mean, that's one of the things that can happen.
Children can provide some economic benefits to seniors, mostly by helping with services, but probably not enough to offset the cost of raising them. And at least right now, seniors who don't have kids are more likely to have had a professional career and have more financial resources. Dr. Jackie says the biggest role of adult children is providing emotional and cognitive support, helping to figure things out, especially if there's dementia involved.
People who don't have children have another kind of support network to look out for some things like that. Sometimes they've made plans on their own. I mean, they know they don't have anybody to fall back on, and they've made those kinds of plans. But then there's the other sad case where nobody has, you know, suddenly they have fallen. That's the most typical thing. Dementia comes on usually fairly slowly. But if they've fallen, or if nobody has noticed that they're having problems, then the state has to usually intervene.
Dr. Jackie says that the most successful planners are the ones who are flexible about their plans and revise them as their circumstances and those of the people around them change. And some, she says, plan without knowing it, just by having strong social support networks or an active church community, basically people around who care about you. Dr. Walker, is this something that you've thought about and planned for in your own life? And what kind of advice do you give for people in this situation?
Yeah, it's great to talk about this. One of the guys I interviewed with for my book talked about falling, and I think he fell off a ladder, and he lived out of town, away from his family, and he said his secretary was the only person who came over to help him out, you know, to do just basic things that he needed help with. And this man is only about 50 years old, and so it really got me to thinking about the vital importance. If you don't have children, you had better really, really work on your building a very strong social network, and not just friends. I think friends are important, but perhaps something like a church family where you're going to have those multiple generations so that you can have some surrogate children to call in to ask about how do you do the internet and help you review the policies before you sign on the line, those kinds of things that children would do for you and people that you can trust.
To sum up, Dr. Ellen Walker, do you think that in your lifetime so far that the attitudes towards people who choose not to have children, have they changed? Is there a more tolerant attitude today?
Absolutely. I am getting so many letters from young women and men saying that they have been really happy to read my book and that they are feeling very little pressure from their own parents to give them grandchildren. So I think it's changing.
And what about just people in general? What do you say when they say, you know, I accept your choice, but I still think that there's just nothing that can replace having children?
Well, I just say that's your experience, and I would disagree. I think that there are things in my life that I feel are nothing can replace, and you might not agree with me on that. So, you know, you just have to agree to disagree.
Sure. Dr. Ellen Walker, thank you so much for joining us today on Kids These Days to talk more about child-free living. And I just want to point out that you do have a book out that came out earlier this year called Complete Without Kids, An Insider's Guide to Child-Free Living by Choice or by Chance. And we will connect you to Dr. Walker's book and her blogs. I know you have two blogs online by visiting kidsthesedays.org. Thank you, Dr. Walker, for joining us.
Thank you so much.
That's it for Kids These Days today. This show is an independent production made in partnership with KSKA-FM in Anchorage, Alaska. Jessica Cochran is our regular contributor, assistant producer, and technical editor. Sarah Gonzalez is this show's producer. She also makes this show and all others available to you anytime online. Visit kidsthesedays.org to find and share this program, find web extras, read our original blogs, or search our archives. We're also on Facebook and Twitter, and you can sign up for our weekly podcasts. Check it all out at kidsthesedays.org. I'm Shanna Sheehy, your host. Thanks so much for being here with me today. I'll see you next week.
The ideas, opinions, and commentary you hear on Kids These Days are those of the hosts, guests, and contributors, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of its funders or broadcast partners. The Content Producers Guild is solely responsible for what you hear on the program. Kids These Days is made possible by a generous grant from the Association of Alaska School Boards and its Initiative for Community Engagement. Kids These Days is produced in partnership with KSKA 91.1 FM Anchorage, KRUA, and the UAA Department of Journalism and Public Communications.